Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Here we go.
Here's John Williams.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, downtown Chicago, on WGN Radio at T-minus 9 minutes.
Lord have mercy.
Remember, at 9 minutes, there'll be a full-scale nuclear attack. Your phone will alert you. This is John Williams. Remember, on social media, I'm WGN King John. WGN King John is me. And by the way, I know we have some folks who don't fully follow the details. There will not be a full-scale attack, although you're going to get a ping on your phone. It's going to be a test from the president at 118. So let's hustle. First, here is our news click yesterday from WGNradio.com. And on my Facebook page, I'm WGN King John on Facebook. Producer Elif, what was the news click yesterday, please?
Jason Van Dyke says that what he saw the night he shot Laquan McDonald is different from what the video shows. A. I believe him, 59%. B. No, the video is the truth, 40%.
All right, 6 out of 10 are saying that they are persuaded by what Van Dyke did on the stand. 4 out of 10 of us say no, the video is different and the video is the truth. I was in that group. Here's our new news click at WGNradio.com.
The Cubs are out of the playoffs because of A. poor pitching, B. poor hitting, C. poor managing, D. we weren't good enough.
Yeah, I think it's D on that. Eric Rung is in our showcase studio. Hi, Eric. How are
you? Good afternoon. I'm good.
From WGN Radio, Eric's news has, WGN Radio News, Eric was reporting on the Van Dyke trial for the last few weeks for us. Did he help or hurt himself, I think, is the $64 question. I was persuaded, and I know you don't want to give your opinion on this, but I was persuaded that he helped himself. Just in general, describe how he comported himself on the stand.
Well, I've talked to a lot of prosecutors about this case and whether or not he would even take the stand. Most of them were under the assumption, former prosecutors, I should say, most of them were under the assumption that he would have to, because his whole case rests on what he saw that night and what he perceived as a threat.
He said that what we saw in the video, this was the thrust of our news click. He said, well, what you're seeing in the video and the animation is not what I saw. It's not exactly my perspective. And if my memory is flawed, it was because I was a little traumatized at the time.
Yeah, and you could see the strategy that the defense team was doing there. They put the psychologist on, the forensic psychologist on first, to talk about how when you're in a dangerous situation, that your body, your brain suppresses the part that makes memories because you're worried about getting yourself out of that danger. And that's why, in generally speaking, he said that people will not remember things exactly as they were. And then that set up Van Dyke to say that, well, that's what I remembered that night. That's what I saw that night. Even though it may contradict what we see on the videotape.
You talked to any cops about his testimony?
I did. I talked to a Chicago police officer who's been on the force for a couple of decades now. And they, of course, have been watching this trial as it unfolds, like all the rest of us, of course, from a very different perspective. The officer that I talked to, I know very well, he said, you know, I don't think he hurt himself, but I don't think he helped himself either. They thought it was just kind of a toss-up on his testimony on whether or not that's going to help his case. They did say that the psychologist that went before him, they thought that was very compelling testimony. And this is from an officer who has fired his weapon in the line of duty.
So closing arguments tomorrow. Closing arguments tomorrow, Thursday. So the jury gets it Thursday or Friday. And then they begin their deliberation. Boy, I sure hope they don't come back quickly, just because whatever their decision is, I want it to feel not snap. I want it to feel measured and that they thought it out. What are you hearing about that?
Well, it really kind of depends on, one, how long the closing arguments go. Just judging by this case, they've moved a lot quicker than I thought they would throughout the entire thing. So maybe by this by tomorrow afternoon, the jury could have the case. The question will then become on jury instructions. Will they get them as soon as they're done? And then they'll start deliberating that day into Friday, Saturday, Sunday. There's a couple things that are coming up here. You have, of course, Sunday, you have the Chicago Marathon.
40,000 runners.
Right. In downtown Chicago.
Million people lining the streets of
the city.
Exactly.
And Chicago police are already preparing for very large protests, depending on how this verdict goes. So I think that probably has to come into consideration. Then you have Columbus Day on Monday, so you have schools out. So, you have another potential for a lot of people to be out in the city, rather.
You're wondering if maybe it wouldn't be wise to orchestrate it so at least we don't get a verdict read until Tuesday.
Right. I could see this is, again, this is just my own experience being in courtrooms, but my guess is that they'll probably do the closing, do the jury instructions, and say, come back on Tuesday.
Jesse Jackson on TV today, he was in the courtroom yesterday, said, no justice, no peace. He said, no justice, no peace. Jesse Jackson said that. I know some of you are critical of me, wondering what would happen if Van Dyke is found not guilty. There was Jesse Jackson saying that yesterday. Okay, Eric, we'll continue to listen for your reports. Thanks for your time.
You got it.
Thanks for your reporting. That's WGN Radio's Eric Rung. From WGN Radio Sports, Kevin Powell is here. You hear him a lot on Ro Khan's show with Anna DeVlantis in the afternoon. Hi, KP.
Took 4 hours and 55 minutes. It was the longest postseason game in Wrigley Field history, John.
Our news click says, why are they out? Pitching, hitting, managing, or we just weren't good enough. What's your answer?
Well, when you get shut out or score one run or less in about a quarter of your games in a season, you're going to run into some trouble, John. 40 games this year, they scored just one run or were shut out. So it's been an up-and-down season for the offense all year. And what happened in the two biggest games of the season? Two runs in 20, how many innings? 25 innings?
13 and 9 is 22.
22 innings. Two runs, John, in the two biggest games of the year. It felt this entire season sort of felt kind of like it felt a little odd because, yes, they won 95 games. For much of the year, they were in first place. They had at least a share of first place since mid-July, and then they lose it on the last day. It's ripped away by the Brewers. The whole time, even when they had the best record in the National League, it just felt like they weren't even playing their best baseball. So I guess if you want a positive spin here, it's that they won 95 games. They had a chance to win their third straight division
title.
Without
ever really being on their game.
Without Yu Darvish. Without Chris Bryant for much of the year. And Chris Bryant never looked good when he came back from his shoulder. His shoulder clearly was bothering him.
Rizzo was up and down.
Brandon Morrow missed the end of the year. So all those things considered, and it still came down to a tiebreaker and then a wild card. But these are the games, John, over the past few years with the Cubs. We've been used to them winning these types of games.
But we're the come-from-behind team. I mean, it's interesting because if you say, what was the Cubs like this year? I'd say, you know, up and down. But this is the year was a lot of fun because we always came from behind and won after being down. But your point about one-fourth of our games being one- or zero-run games is the year the offense went AWOL. And it's funny because you always worry about pitching. Our pitching wasn't bad in the last few games.
It was outstanding. And everyone can be mad at the bullpen this and the bullpen that. Please, the bullpen's ERA was near the best for most of the season. The starters over the final month were outstanding. Without them, they would have been in a lot of trouble.
What happened with Javi Baez? I was texting back and forth with my son and with my brother last night about the game. And I said, if I'm in Colorado, I am losing my mind when Javi Baez comes around and they want to maybe, it would have been a difficult double play because he's about to collide with the runner, but if he wanted to try, I think all he had to do was try and make the effort to throw the ball. They're third baseman, you know the play.
Nolan Arenado. Oh, where they hugged each other?
Yeah, and then Javi kind of grabs him around, and the guy, I know exactly what was happening. This is my view of it anyway, that he knew he wasn't going to get a double play.
Right.
Javi, you're out. Okay, so we'll just stall here, and rather than fall down or get all testosterone-y, we'll just hug it out and we're good. But if he had thrown a fit, if he had sold that he was impeded, I think it's a double play. I think it's interference.
Well, you know, it's interesting because in the press box, that wasn't even a conversation. I think everyone that saw it live was just sort of like, we realized that they kind of did this dancing act.
Violetta, did you get a text message on your phone?
I did. It came a little bit late. I was a little disappointed.
Mine before you, and we're in the same room.
Yeah, because okay. I'm like, Kim, I didn't get it.
What did it say?
It just said presidential alert. And let me pull it up.
We have
here
to call it a presidential alert. I mean, of all presidencies, do we have to call it a presidential alert?
It looks a lot like when you get a Amber Alert. You know, it's just a gray background with the triangle with the exclamation point in
right.
it. And it just says, this is a test of the National Wireless Emergency Alert System. No action required. No action needed.
But it says presidential alert also.
Right.
You know, which means like something bad could happen. Sad.
Sponsored by Trump Hotels.
I know.
But you want to know where the message came from.
Democrats are losers.
If someone's sending you a message, you want to know who. Who's telling you it?
Why does it have to be presidential?
Presidential?
It's coming from FEMA.
It's coming from the United States government.
Right.
It's coming from the White House. It's come, but it's.
I am the government.
I know. I'm surprised it almost doesn't say presidential Trump alert. But
or we didn't have a little orange faced emoji or something.
A bunch of losers are coming after us. It's an emergency.
You know, maybe a little orange fire tornado, something to indicate that it's
this
coming
is the
from.
Best alert you'll ever get.
Some are saying that was the most well-executed alert system in the history of man.
A lot of people say that if I was in charge, we wouldn't have presidential problems.
It is kind of weird, though. It was at the top of my screen. Normally, I get my alerts in the middle.
Mine was in the middle.
No. Okay, so it looks like everything went smoothly, and America is safe. This is a test
this
of the
is
national
huge.
Wireless.
No, we're safe, everybody.
No action is needed, it says at the bottom. All right.
You know where action is needed, John?
Oh, man, now back to sports.
The Cubs personnel. I'm really interested. Theo Epstein's going to talk to in about 2 or 3 hours here, and he's got a lot of questions to answer, John. The Cub fans have wanted Joe Maddon to be fired even after they won the World Series. Right now...
You think he overmanaged us in the playoffs, the pitching and the...
Sometimes. I thought last night he managed a great game. I really do. I mean,
what about
all
the
things
game
considered.
I didn't think we needed to pull our pitcher after 65. Was it last night or the night before?
Two nights before the Jose Quintana. I thought in that moment, I was okay with it. I thought he managed very well the past 2 days. He's not going to get fired. I'm telling everybody that right now. He's got one more year on his contract. If things don't go well next year, you could see some changes. But when it comes to the actual players, I'm really curious to see how drastic the changes are. What about guys like Albert Almora, Kyle Schwarber, Ian Happ, guys that are sort of fringe, not really starters every day, but they also still have kind of a lot of hope for these guys?
Well, put it this way. Who are the untouchables? Rizzo. Bryant.
Baez.
Contreras?
Yes, he
three.
Is. Even though Contreras had a down year in the second half, they still view him as one of the best catchers. They're not going to trade him. So
we love that guy. Love the fire.
Love the fire. Had a really bad second half, though.
Baez. So the corners, shortstop, and the catcher.
Zobrist isn't going to go anywhere because he's got one more year on his deal. They love him. It's totally worth keeping him.
Jason
Hayes. Hamels, we'll see. We'll see if they pick up an option. They can go a lot of different routes. I wouldn't be shocked if they bring Hamels back.
Hayward,
the only way he wouldn't be back is if they traded him. And I don't know if anybody's going to take that contract. If you traded him, it means the Cubs are going for Bryce Harper. Because then you got a gap in right field. If all of a sudden they traded Jason Hayward and somebody somehow took his deal, which is still a big one, I think it's going to be very tough to find a taker for Jason Hayward. But if they did, that would tell me they were actually going all in on Bryce Harper.
Would you say job one is a closer?
No, because I think you have Brandon Morrow. If he's healthy, he's fine. He was lights out before he got hurt. I think here's my to-do list for Theo Epstein and company. One, figure out the offensive inefficiencies. Crazy head-scratching stuff this year with the offense, Sean. Two, you need some power arms in the bullpen. Swing and miss guys. A lot of the guys in the bullpen were pitched to contact. They weren't dominant. I mean, look at Rockies yesterday. Ottavino, that guy had some nasty stuff. He was striking everybody out. So add some bullpen arms. Fix the offense and get healthy. Chris Bryant needs to get healthy. Yu Darvish needs to get healthy, and Brandon Morrow needs to get healthy.
I wish that little tiny speedster we got, Al Gore.
Terrence Gore.
I wish that he had not swung on that last pitch, because then he would have been on first, and if he's on first, he's on second.
Exactly.
And then we got a chance to win that.
Yeah. A lot of people were frustrated he swung at a full count. I was surprised he swung at all. I'm surprised Joe Maddon said, look, you go up there, you try to bunt twice, and then put the bat on your shoulder.
At full count, even though everybody knows all they got to do is throw a strike, and this guy will be out.
Strikes on the size of a 10-year-old little leaguer.
I would have pulled him aside and said, I don't care if it's right down the heart of the plate. You are not swinging. You are not, because you can't hit anyway. Do not swing the bat. He swung up all four.
The only thing I would maybe question about Joe Maddon's managing, Terrence Gore remained in the game and left. Maddon could have found a way where Schwarber stayed in the game and played left, and he would have had two more at-bats. That was the only thing. And you kind of have to go back and look at how it all shook out. But that was maybe the only thing I really kind of questioned from Madden last night.
Our news click at WGNradio.com. It's on my Facebook page, too. I'm WGN King. John asks you, why are the Cubs out of the playoffs? You got four options, and you're going to vote for...
The offense.
Offense. You think it's why are we out of the playoffs? Hitting, pitching, managing, or we just weren't that good?
Hitting
was a...
Pitching was outstanding.
All right. Nice to see you, my friend.
You too. Thanks for having me.
We'll listen for you a little later on. By the way, your texts include these. Uh-oh, John, I didn't get the test. You know, that text alert from the president? That's kind of weird, isn't it? It's like, well, actually, we're not going to include you in the emergency system. That's a little nerve-wracking. John, the emergency speaking guy sounds very sleepy. Text messages did not go through for a few minutes after the test. Yeah, I don't know why the emergency announcer guy we have on the radio is... I don't know if... You don't want him to be panicked. You don't want him to go, whoa, hey, ho, ho, ho. You don't want that. But you also don't want... if there's an emergency, we might
a little urgency.
We might get to you. This was the emergency guy, and I mean, you want a little confidence in that voice.
Don't you think that it would benefit us if you were a little more enthusiastic?
Like knees to chest, people, alert. Okay, yeah. Here's what we're going to do. We are going to start running. We're going to run south or whatever we're going to do, but... He was just like, I don't know.
This one's a doozy.
Did you want it to be like, danger, Will Robinson?
Warning. In fact, yes. Yeah. Go to, what was the name of that TV show?
Lost in Space.
Lost in Space. Once you get Phil Vitale going, the restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune, it's hard to get your life back. Hi, Phil.
Hi.
Phil.
So interesting.
Kim, Phil was very, he came up here, his heart was sort of beating really hard, he looked distracted. What was the problem?
Oh, that emergency buzz came off on my cell phone, and I'm like, what does the president want me to know now? So I'm just calming down.
You should
not
call it a presidential alert. I'm just saying, I like that in this day and age,
right.
Because of the connectivity of it all, it's a feature we should use, and I'd like that they'd be able to tell me if there's a missile coming or a typhoon or something like that. But the word presidential alert has been sort of denuded by a guy who's always tweeting crazy stuff.
Exactly. Is not every day a presidential alert and has been for the last 18 months? It has it all. Alert makes fun of rape victim. Great, because that is comedy gold. So let's go with that a bit.
I was going to say, shame on you, people of Mississippi, but I thought if he was at the Rosemont Horizon or something, we would have had 10,000 screaming knuckleheads cheering on his mocking of a woman who credibly said she was sexually assaulted. So I guess it's not just Mississippi.
No.
It's just a population of people that so love him that they don't care what he says or the consequences of it.
Yeah. And just less risky in Mississippi.
And that, yeah, but if I had to pick a state,
right,
I'd say Southern.
And Alabama's booked. then.
And Oklahoma's not handy.
Right.
I'm going to go there. On that thought, and then I'm not going to talk to you about this anymore, but we're going to play just part of what the president said. And then, as it turns out, yesterday I had a long conversation with, and we haven't posted it yet or played it yet, but we will afterwards. I had a long conversation with this memory expert from Northwestern University who talks about what we do remember, why, and when. You know, and it's fascinating, and it's ever so relevant. I didn't see your story in the Tribune today. How come?
No. Well, I had spent some time and effort and Tribune money on a 1,000 word takeout on where to eat around Wrigley Field for the playoffs.
Oh, that's a bad idea.
It was a fine idea a week ago, which is when I was actually doing the work. It was a great idea. And then I watched the weekend and going,
Well, I got an idea. Okay, so how about this? Can you just tweak it a little and say fine dining in the Milwaukee region? Because
right.
It's not far away.
No, that's true.
Lord knows they're going to be busy.
Right, and they've got those bratwursts nailed. So, yeah. No, I could do that, but I don't
so
think
they literally then didn't print the 1,000-word
right.
message?
Right. It went live online on Monday when it was still obvious we were going to have, we had at least two more
games.
Postseason games. But then we got cold feet and we made the right call. Trouble is with the Wednesday section, we have to make the We have to make the final decision on that section by 4 or 5 o'clock on Monday.
Yeah, sure.
And that's right up against the deadline. And they made the, and as it was, if we had got special dispensation to wait till Tuesday, this game wasn't settled till 11:45. The trucks would be delivering the paper now.
Well, where are some good places to eat around Wrigley Field? I'll tell you what. You know, I live around there, and mm-hmm. I like to talk about life around there. They'll be less busy. You have a better shot of getting a table.
Right, right.
So everything at the Hotel Zachary is probably a better bet right now.
Right, right. Mordecai is really good. I would go to Mordecai on November 28th, assuming it wasn't Thanksgiving, which is not. It's 22nd this year, but yeah, that place is a serious restaurant, and most of the restaurants surrounding it are geared for more of the chicken fingers and good burger and good well, simple pub food stuff.
And Smokehouse is good.
Yeah,
Smoke Daddy is really good.
That's and what Big I Star is same as the Wicker Park, only bigger and more spacious.
That Big Star is packed all the time.
Well,
all the time.
Tacos are only $4 or $3 each, and that's pretty high if you're in Pilsen in a taqueria. But for that neighborhood, the idea that you can have two pretty meaty tacos for $8 and throw in a $10 margarita and you're out the door,
had one of the best cocktails I've had in a long time, and I might go there again this evening. Attention, Brenda. This is a John alert. We may get this. Martini alert. No kidding, though. If you go to the Hotel Zachary, and where they have the Dutch and Doc, or mm-hmm. Doc and Dutch, between that and Smoke Daddy, they have their own hotel restaurant on the second floor.
Right.
And there, they serve a chilled martini of like maybe Bombay Sapphire or mm-hmm. some gin. But then with just a little orange liqueur in there.
Really?
And then an orange rim. And in a little glass. And it's delicious.
And you approve.
And I can only have about 7 of those.
Yeah.
Right. And then I say,
man
that's
needs
enough.
To know his limits. Yeah.
So that's a nice beverage. But that whole complex you and I have talked about too much is nice. Where else? Any other surprises in that area? And then I'll stop talking to you about this. But any other places in that area you like?
The urban, now I've blanked on the name, it's going to come back to me.
Cowboy? You like an urban cowboy?
I do. The bull riding thing is awesome.
Yeah.
They do Detroit-style pizza. It's in that hotel, boutique hotel, about 2 blocks south on Clark Street. And if you've never had Detroit-style pizza, which is a thing in and of itself, nothing else like it, it's kind of fun. It's sort of a cross between a pizza crust and a focaccia with all sorts of good toppings. And it's good. It's a good way. If you've never had that, that's a good place to.
All right, you're going to think of the name of that place in a minute.
Yes.
In the meantime, talk to me about Hamburger Hop. What was this all about?
That was the annual friendly competition between Chicago chefs, in which they all kind of come up with this cool chefy burger, and the public can pay to come in, and you just have to taste everything, and there's drinks, and there's a panel of judges, and they're picking the best burger. But each participant, each customer that comes in, gets a little bottle cap, and you put that in the bucket of the place you like the best, and they count up the bottle caps, and they announce a People's Choice Award winner as well. And it's a big fun thing, and they bring in all kinds of really good chefs, not even necessarily people who are known for their for their burgers, and it's fun. It's about 15 chefs this year, each doing. Some of them were doing things based on nationality. They were doing. There was a Greek burger out there. There was a Salute to Spain. There were all these others, and they really. I mean, it's a friendly competition, but they put some serious effort into these burgers. I mean, there's foie gras on one. There's prosciutto di Parma on another.
You know, it seems to me like here in Chicago, and when I was in Minneapolis, too, I noticed it, that these blended burgers, where they put some higher-end cuts of meat, and they make a blended patty, and that is to die for. There are just some really good burgers out there these days, and I don't remember that 10 years ago, 5 years ago, but of late, it seems like if you get a good burger at a good place, it's It's not a hamburger. It's not what McDonald's is serving.
Right.
It's a different food category.
Mm-hmm.
So who won, or was there one that you liked especially?
There was
well?
One, as I said in my, and I said one burger to rule them all. The Tony Priolo of Maillard Tavern, which is that little triangular space where Halstead and Milwaukee and Grand converge, right next to his Piccolo Sonia, across the street from his Piccolo Sonia restaurant. Tony won the People's Choice Award. And the judges award. That's never that hasn't happened in the 9-year history of this competition.
Hop.
Right. Maillard refers to the Maillard reaction, which is what happens when you apply heat to sugars and amino acid proteins, that why your burger gets dark and crunchy and crispy on the outside. It's actually a chemical reaction, and the name of it is called the Maillard reaction. So he named his burger joint Maillard Tavern. And he had this crazy, he took the burger and he added foie gras pesto and foie gras, no, back truffle pesto and foie gras mayo, a little bit of foie gras and a little prosciutto on one, and a couple of people joked, putting foie gras on a burger competition is cheating because it's so good. Come on. But other places did black garlic aioli. One guy did put kimchi on his. Someone had a balsamic glazed onion jam. That was Timothy O'Toole's.
Did you write these up? Is there a description of these? Where can I get that?
You can get that on our dining page, chicagotribune.com/dining. You might have to hunt around a little bit because this story went live Saturday morning, but it's there.
I'm out of time.
Ah.
It's good to see you, Phil Vitale.
Thank you. This was fun.
If you're
first story I didn't write, or that I wrote and nobody's except
Well, we appreciate you coming in here and saying hi. It's always nice to see you. Generally, read them in the Tribune on Wednesdays. And you can always read them online at chicagotribune.com/dining. Restaurant critic Phil Vitale. Thanks,
Thank
Phil.
You.
By the way, somebody snapped their fingers and said, I know the place that Phil's trying to recollect that has that really good Detroit-style pizza, and that's Union Full Board. Union Full Board. Three words. Thank you very much to those of you that knew that, and thank you to Phil for remembering that. Our textures include these. Hey, John, credible in your mind, we were talking about Christine Blasey Ford and Brett Kavanaugh. Credible in your mind is everybody says she was at the party, denied it. Is everybody she says was at the party denied it. Huh, says 708 about my description of that event. I don't actually think that's true. My understanding is the people who are quote-unquote denying it are people who say they don't remember it. Do you remember every single party you were ever at in high school and who was there? But if you maybe were sexually assaulted, you might remember that party. And she said she remembers what happened in that bedroom. Now, if you don't remember what happened to her in the bedroom, you weren't there. And if you don't remember the party, maybe it's because it wasn't an eventful event for you. That's my take on all of this. Either way, what the president did last night in Mississippi was shameful. David, I think it's Bhutto. David, do you pronounce your last name Bhutto?
Yeah, Bhutto. Thank you, John.
Welcome to the show. You're a photographer who captured what some people say is the image of Senator Flake conferring with Lindsey Graham and the other senators the day of the Judiciary Committee hearing. Welcome to the show. I just wanted to sort of hear you out a little bit because I don't know that you have any insight on whether or not she's telling the truth, but you can sure tell us what that bizarre hearing was like that we all watched on TV. You were there, right?
I was there. I wasn't in the room the day before when Christie Blasey Ford testified. I was in the Kavanaugh hearing a couple of weeks before, but on Friday when the Judiciary Committee was planning to do that vote that was then going to send the nomination on to the Senate at large, I was in the hearing for about an hour in the morning, and then we heard the vote was going to happen at 1:30, and I went back in at about 1 o'clock, and everybody kind of expected that it was going to get pushed through. But as soon as I got in the room, clearly there was some tension there, and the whole thing was really unusual by Washington standards.
It got strange when Flake and Coons got up and just walked out, right?
Yeah, I wasn't in there for that, actually. By the time I got in, most of the Republicans had sat down on their side of the room. So the Republicans sit on one side and the Democrats sit on the other. So the Republicans had kind of taken their seats, but none of the Democrats were there, and Flake wasn't there, which was the most notable thing. So as the rest of the Republicans came, sat down, the Democrats started to filter in. Flake was actually, my recollection is that he was the last person to come into, or the last senator to come into the room. So that was what was, you know, that's what made it so unusual, that he came in and then he was suddenly on his side of the room, kind of an outsider relative to his, you know, fellow Republicans, yeah. Which made the whole thing very, very strange.
And then what happened?
Well, Grassley called the hearing to order, and then he said that that Jeff Flake wanted to say something, and that's when Flake fairly briefly called for a one-week delay and the FBI investigation. And so that's kind of when, you know, the buzz really, it was palpable in the room that, you know, everything had changed. People, you know, there was this expectation that, you know, at that point, the thing was just going to go forward. But suddenly he thrown a wrench into the whole thing.
Did everybody know that there was this two-hour clock that was ticking? How aware were you or other people in the room, by your estimation, how aware was everybody that that at any moment Grassley's going to hit the gavel and say time's up?
Well, I think that's what people were expecting, but at some time, I think it was around maybe noon, I was, you know, shooting a couple of other things of protest and something else around that time, but you know, I kind of heard on a television that there might be some kind of a delay because Flake was talking to Coons, and everybody was really uncertain at that time exactly how everything was going to go down. So you know, when I rolled into the room about 1 o'clock, it was nobody really knew exactly what was going to happen.
Now,
which
was
very unusual for these hearings.
Yeah, so, but I mean, but you know, my question is, then all of a sudden Grassley goes, "Okay, boom, time's up." And Dianne Feinstein says, what? And he goes, that's the two-hour rule. The two-hour rule. We have to stop now. And I didn't know about the two-hour rule. And I got the feeling that the other senators in the room did not realize that they were that close to... I don't even know how Grassley determined that 2 hours was up at that instant. Did he have a stopwatch? Or how did he know? So I'm just kind of curious about how abruptly it ended. It's not all that important.
Well, it was abrupt, and he was, at some point earlier in the day, he had his, I forget if it was an iPhone, or he had his cell phone with a timer on it, and you could see him holding it.
Really?
So he was definitely keeping, yeah, huh. So, and some of my colleagues got pictures of that, which is sort of amusing, but so you can see that he was really keeping careful track of the time, and so, yeah, the whole thing really, as soon as Flake made a statement, there was a lot of confusion, but there was just a couple of minutes of chatter, really, among the senators.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, then the vote was taken and the gavel came down.
Less than a minute left here. What was the picture you took then? What was the moment you captured?
So as soon as the gavel came down, that's when I'm able to stand up, because I was sitting right in front of the dais. And I had moved into a position to be right in front of Flake when the thing was over, because I thought he's clearly the most important person in the room at that point. So I stood up and just trained my camera on him and framed it so that there'd be a little bit of space around him, because I wanted to see how the other Republican senators were going to react to him in that moment. So that ended up being the picture that, you know, kind of captured that day.
All the key players are there,
anyway.
And you can see the concern and confusion on their faces. It really sort of captures the moment. My producer, Elif, will post the picture again, but it was well done, and what a strange day and strange time. Nice to meet you, nice to talk to you, and it was good to see your work, David. Thanks for your time this afternoon.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Cubbies.
Here's John Williams.
Our news click is about the Chicago Cubs. I'm so glad the Bears are doing well, because Brenda and I were walking along the lake today with Daisy in the G7 action stroller, now with mesh canopy, and I said, I kind of miss baseball all of a sudden. I wish we had playoffs to look forward to, but... We got the Bears. And did you say the Blackhawks, Kim, open the regular season tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night in Ottawa.
How is that possible?
The home game Sunday. I know. Can you believe it? And it's 86 degrees outside.
All sports seasons are
too
long.
The ice will be melting.
Well, fortunately, they're playing indoors.
Exactly. Yeah.
So the News Click producer Olive, speaking of sports, the producer, the News Click is what?
The Cubs are out of the playoffs because of A, poor pitching, B, poor hitting, C, poor managing, D, we weren't good enough.
I said, by the way, Kevin, you'll appreciate this. I said the answer is we weren't good enough.
Can we go with an all of the above?
Yeah, that's kind of we aren't good enough. We weren't good enough.
What was wrong with the pitching?
Nobody, not one person so far has said it was
good,
the pitching.
Good, considering they only gave up a few runs over the past
two
games.
Well, but look, if we'd won more games in April, we would be in the playoffs too. So, I mean, really, we wouldn't have had that one dang game playoff. So, to me, the reason we are not in the playoffs is because we weren't as good as the Milwaukee Brewers. We weren't good enough. But 55% of you right now are saying that the hitting this year is the reason that we are not in the playoffs. I think you may have been unduly influenced by Kevin Powell's testimony that was heard earlier here, and that some
of you
are supposed
to. I apologize for skewing your very scientific poll here, John. I apologize.
Yeah. By the way, the News Click has a plus or minus accuracy of 100%. It has zero scientific accuracy. Zero.
Kevin, it is a good idea, I think.
Do you think the Addison Russell thing also had a psychological effect on the team?
That sure was it.
Well, I mean, Joe Maddon did admit the following day after that news broke. Remember, that was the Friday before the White Sox and Cubs played on the South Side. It was 2-3 weeks ago, and the Sox took it to him pretty good. And then Joe Maddon the next day said, look, it was tough to ignore the whole situation. The clubhouse had a different vibe. So for that specific game, yeah, we know that it did. For the rest of the stretch, I don't necessarily know. I mean, they played pretty good. They took their last, what, three or four series in a row, so it's not like they completely collapsed. Got to give a lot of credit to Milwaukee. And, you know, look, we could have the whole debate. This is a whole other conversation about how the wild card format is set up, but, you know, the Cubs had a much better record than the Rockies, and it's one and done just like that. So.
Well, up the middle, we were still pretty good with.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Addison Russell doesn't
have
play,
to have him. Yeah,
play for the Cubs again, but if that is the case, the Cubs should be in the market for a shortstop. And you might say, wait, a shortstop? They have Javi Baez. But the beauty of Javi Baez is that you can put him at second, short, and third base, and that allows you a ton of flexibility. You can put Chris Bryant in left. You can Ben Zobrist at second base. You can do so many different things. When Russell was out, Baez was set at shortstop. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but the Cubs lost some flexibility when Russell went out. So who knows? Maybe they get a shortstop, a defensive shortstop that gives Matt a little more flexibility.
The News Click is at WGNradio.com. Vote with your mouse. Tell us what you think there. We'll also post it on my Facebook page. I'm WGN, King John, on Facebook. At a rally, this is what the president said about the Brett Kavanaugh, Christie Blasey Ford controversy. This was his take on her recollection.
36 years ago, this happened. I had one beer. Right? I had one beer. Well, do you think it was? Nope, it was one beer. Oh, good. How did you get home? I don't remember. How'd you get there? I don't remember. Where is the place? I don't remember. How many years ago was it? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. What neighborhood was it in? I don't know. Where's the house? I don't know. Upstairs, downstairs, where was it? I don't know. But I had one beer. That's the only thing I remember. And a man's life is in tatters. A man's life is shattered. His wife is shattered. His daughters, who are beautiful, incredible young kids. They destroy people. They want to destroy people. These are really evil people. And then you see.
President speaking. Now, before he said all of that, yesterday we recorded a conversation. We wanted to do it live. It didn't work out. We had to pre-record it with Joel Voss, who is a memory expert and associate professor at Northwestern's Feinberg School of Medicine. I asked Professor Voss what exactly it is that he does.
I direct a laboratory where we study mechanisms of memory and memory disorders. So we do imaging research where we bring in healthy people and put them through experiments to try to better understand how their memory works. We also study memory disruptions in people due to brain injuries and neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's. And we also develop brain stimulation methods using non-invasive induction of electricity in people's brains to try to modify their memory abilities.
I didn't get all of that, but what I took from that was that he's a memory guy. He's an expert at Northwestern on memory. So we asked him, what did he think of the credibility of something that Christine Blasey Ford did or did not remember? How does memory even work?
For the most part, we have, you know, pretty accurate and valid memories. You know, memory is good at doing some things, like remembering salient events from our past and allowing us to base our future actions on our history of experiences. But memory does have notable weaknesses, if you want to call them that. You know, memory is individual specific. You know, you can only remember what you experience, so you don't have a top-down view of everything happening in a circumstance, you know, and so it is, you know, very individual. And it's not like a tape recorder, you know, it's not like a video camera or a tape recorder that faithfully records every element of someone's experience. It is, you know, imbued with your notions about what's happening and the personal qualities of the experience, not necessarily their objective details.
Their personal qualities, meaning something that's more particularly good or bad, might more deeply imprinted in your memory?
Sure, that's part of it. Also, you know, in a very straightforward way, you know, one of the things that I research is the interaction between attention or what you're attending to and what gets encoded in your memory. You know, at some level, you know, given any circumstance you find yourself in, you'll be attending to some things and not attending to other things. And really, it's those things that you attend to, either because they're salient or meaningful or potentially even traumatic. Those are going to be the things that get preferentially encoded and will be later on available for memory, whereas those other things that you might not be attending to for a particular reason, either because they were peripheral, not particularly important to you, inconsistent with your preconceived notions or the things like that, will then not get incorporated into your memory and will not later be available for you to remember because they weren't really as key elements of your experience as those salient attended things.
So we sort them that way, whether we tend to or not, huh?
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Christine Blasey Ford may be lying top to bottom to us, but let's assume for a moment that she's not. Then it's logical that she would not remember the where and the when of a party, but she would remember something traumatic that happened that day?
Yeah, you know, I mean, kind of like a bit of the testimony that she gave where she kind of went into some of the detailed mechanistic brain-level explanations, you know, stop for just a minute and try to recollect any powerful, salient event from your life. Think about your high school graduation or a best friend's birthday party or something else that was meaningful, something that you can really relive, right? So take a second, find a memory, relive it. Okay, so I'm sure you can do that. Now tell me what day of the week it was. Now tell me what exact shirt you were wearing. Now tell me, you know, exactly which of your friends were there and not, you know, all these details. You know, some of them come along for the ride, not all of them do. And it's a pretty normal part of our experience that we can have vivid recollections of the past that lack a lot of the very specifying contextual details that allow us to place them in specific locations and at specific times, just because that stuff isn't the salient part of our experience. And so it just sort of falls away over time.
So let me tell you what I've been doing, and I think a lot of us have been doing a version of what you've just described. I have been thinking about high school parties I went to in the 1970s. And I can remember a scene where I walked into a living room, and it was full of kids, some of who I knew, some of who I liked, some who I didn't know, and some who I know didn't like me. It was one of those scenes.
Sure.
And when a cute girl walked through, the crowd would cheer or ooh. And when I walked in, they all booed. And I remember, what am I, 17 in this scene, that was embarrassing to me, and it really hurt my feelings. Okay, I remember that. I don't remember anything else about it except that feeling and them cheering when one girl walked through and booing when I walked in. So I suppose that's representative of what you've been talking about, but that was just a mild humiliation. Isn't
sure,
it possible,
yeah,
though, that if I were to suffer something very traumatic at that party, that I would better remember whose house it was and what day of the week it was? Doesn't that event maybe more focus my memory of the whole scene?
No. In fact, most of the research suggests that throwing some trauma into a memory will actually emphasize the disparity between the salient and the background. You know, if you think about it in terms of signal to noise, the signal is those things you pay attention to, the noise is all the extraneous things. It will actually increase that signal to noise, so it will make you more focused on the important details at the expense of all the other ones. No one knows exactly why, but it does seem to be a feature of trauma and stress-related memories in general, that there's more of a disparity, more of a honing of the most critical details to you at that moment, and falling away of all the general context.
Yeah, so at the expense of that other stuff,
it could be that in the moment you pay more attention to the salient, the things that are attacking you or hurting you or otherwise causing you stress, and that leaves you even less able to pay attention to all the extraneous details. It could have something to do with what happens to the memory afterwards, you know, so people tend to relive memories. That's what keeps them fresh, keeps them active, keeps them going. And when you relive it, you relive those salient details. You don't relive the day of the week. And so over time, you could be getting even more of an amplification of the difference between signal and noise.
I understand that. But isn't it possible that as we replay these stories year after year, we... Mm-hmm. manage them, we change them a little bit, we put in details that later on in life we actually thought were true, but in fact weren't, and that the memory has itself changed over the years.
You know, I haven't yet invented a time machine, I don't know about you, but, you know, it's very difficult to go back to the past and figure out exactly what details were experienced.
So then what do we say when someone says, I'm 100% sure that that was the face that I was looking at?
What that would probably mean to me, although this is just speculation, is that the identity of the individual was part of the original memory, and it was part of what was replayed over time. And so, you know, if her recollection very soon after the event and included that person, then that would lead to that kind of confidence, I'd imagine.
What do you want to say to anybody else who said, well, her testimony is fraught with problems? She doesn't remember the when or the where or the who. How would you advise them on that?
I don't know if there's an easy solution, because I'm imagining that every statement about the evaluation of individuals in this case is politically charged, and therefore it's hard to evaluate how much they even really believe the statements that they're making. But nonetheless, you know, I would advise to take a little bit of introspection and think about themselves a little bit, think about their own memories, and put themselves on the same bar for every event that's important to them in their life or salient to them in their life. Can they recall every detail of the day of the week and everything else?
Dr. Joel Voss is a memory expert. He's a professor at Northwestern's Feinberg School of Medicine and studies memory there. That full conversation, you heard 9 minutes of it, is at WGNradio.com, and it's right on our front page. He talked to us for about 25 minutes or so. I don't remember. I think it was 23, 24, 25 minutes, something like that. The full conversation, and he's really interesting. He also talked about false memories, and he talked about Jason Van Dyke and what he did or didn't remember and how that's possible or impossible. He talked about all of that. It's a nice conversation. You'll find it at WGNradio.com on our front page. Violetta Podramedic hurt my feelings during the break because she asked me if the story I told about being at the party in high school where everybody booed was true. I only tell true stories on the radio, V.
I was just making sure. I just couldn't believe that.
And
it was unbelievable.
It's unbelievable that John
And if
would
you
walk,
testified to that, I don't not, think I'd believe you.
You would not find that credible.
Nope.
I told the story about walking into a party and everybody booed when I walked in. I don't remember anything. I don't remember. I could describe the room, and I remember the sofa some of the kids were walking in and how embarrassed and painful that was to me, but whose house it was, what school year it was, you know, anything, any other detail. And that was just a small thing. So imagine if the trauma were even greater. I said, but I also asked the doctor, I'm not sure if he's a doctor, Joel Voss, the associate professor at the Feinberg School, but I said, if the event were more traumatic, isn't it possible, though, that that would put a, you know, would better enable you to remember the details. And he said, no, it's the opposite. If it's even more traumatic, not you were humiliated, but you were attacked, then the noise, all that other stuff on the periphery really goes away. And you just focus on the face or the room or the stairs or your escape. So where somebody texted a moment ago, she doesn't know where the party was or how she got there. If you were assaulted, you will remember at least where it happened. He said, maybe not at all. That at least her story, none of us are there. Only two or three people on earth know what happened that night. But her story is at least, according to a memory expert, consistent with the memories of people that have been assaulted. And that was that. And I was nothing like that. But I have you guys done that at all? Like, tried to write? You guys are so much younger than me. You all are in your late 20s, right? But for somebody who's in his late 50s, I can remember events at parties when I was young. And I do remember some details. Some of them are fun. Some of them are not fun. But I, all the peripheral stuff. And again, none of us are talking about assaults, but I don't remember those details.
I remember I don't remember what grade, but I remember when I got laughed at by everyone in the class because snot came out of my nose.
But I wonder...
Wait, but the story's not done yet.
Okay.
And it was because I was crying because I lost my coat.
Oh, so you're upset about that. Now you're yeah. got a little goober
no,
and everybody's
I might cry
laughing.
Again. For young Elif.
That stuff, isn't it funny? Because we can laugh about it now, but at the time, and there was no fixing it. No adult in your life could have made that pain go away.
But honestly, I think right now it's more of a laugh of hysteria for me, personally.
Yeah, well, that's good. You sound well. V, you were going to say something?
Well, I wonder, I remember embarrassing moments or times when I was scared, but I wonder if my memory changes it. Like, did those people really laugh at you when you walked in, or were you just embarrassed to walk in?
I think that's a really good question. And I saw the faces. But that's my memory. It's like when they say, that's your truth, if it didn't happen, all I can tell you is what's in my brain. My brain remembers everybody laughing.
Like, you know, it feels like everyone's staring at you when you walk in, but no one probably noticed,
exactly,
you know? Or
exactly. Well, I asked the doctor, I keep calling him doctor, I asked Joel Voss, I said, what about false memories? Is it possible, though, that we sort of create scenes as the years go by? We kind of Brian Williams it, you know? And he talks about that, too. It's on our front page at WGNradio.com. Okay, thank you, Kim. So good to see the Blackhawks are around the corner tomorrow night, you said again, right? The Blackhawks.
Thursday, yes.
Thursday night. And then the Bears are playing well. Hopefully Northwestern, the Wildcats get it together again. So, you know, I'm just looking forward to sports. It's such a part of my life. And the Cubs, as you may know, are not playing anymore this season. The White Sox are idle. So, you know, I'm looking for some teams to root for.
It's just that time to transition seasons.
I know, it is. But I wanted to have both seasons.
I know.
To have a little baseball and a little of this. I'm watching the Dow, too. Talk about numbers. Up 40, 50 points again today. I mean, we're closing in on 27,000. It's up 39 points right now. 26.
Yeah, we're 26,812.
How about them apples? So here's something we haven't talked about. That Cook County watchdog, the Inspector General, Patrick Blanchard, filed a report, and he said that the scheme to defraud saved Pritzker $330,000 in property taxes. That's what the watchdog for Cook County says about J.B. Pritzker when they famously took the toilets out of one of his mansions that they were redoing, had it deemed uninhabitable. And as a result, he didn't have to pay the same kind of taxes because it was an uninhabitable property, this mansion, right? So Rauner, knowing full well that this thing was going to resonate, has been running this commercial.
Chicago's porcelain prince of tax avoidance, J.B. Pritzker. Pritzker spent millions on his second Gold Coast mansion, then took out the toilets. To dodge hundreds of thousands in property taxes, Pritzker removed every single toilet from his multi-million dollar second home and claimed it as uninhabitable. A royal flush of tax avoidance. Porcelain Prince J.B. Pritzker. Lower taxes for him, higher taxes for you.
That's pretty funny.
Pretty clever writing. And lo and behold, it looks like, according to the Inspector General, that ad's kind of true. Here's what J.B. Pritzker says about that. This is an internal, confidential document by the Inspector General's office, which was looking into the assessor's office that was leaked for political reasons in the last month of a campaign. I don't know. I kind of think everything I've been reading and seeing about this makes it sound true. It doesn't mean that J.B. Pritzker isn't a good guy or wouldn't be a good governor. But you're trying to score these commercials. Lou Manfredini's been having, I think, some of the same frustrations I have been, our Mr. Fix-It on WGN, with the truth of ads. Hey, Lou, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Jen?
He's our porcelain king.
In a good way, Lou.
I think that was a compliment.
It was. It was a compliment. That's the best way.
I know.
That actually, comment could be taken.
Right, because like you do know plumbing.
I do know plumbing. I do.
You are a porcelain prince.
I am.
Just spit my water out.
Right out your nose. The whole class laughed. All right. So, what's your theory about? Okay.
Well,
so at least that's an example of where an ad was sort of scored and sort of said to be true. What do you think about?
You actually spawned this idea because I was driving around. I think it was maybe a week and a half ago, and you had Erica Harold on. You were interviewing her.
Yeah.
And you
she's running for attorney general.
She's running for attorney general, and you had a conversation with her about her ads, or particular the ads that Kwame Raoul, who is running against her for attorney general, was accusing her of, you know, not liking babies or something, whatever the ad said.
Yeah.
And she had an opportunity to kind of dispel what was being said. Well, that's really taken out of context and this and that. And the problem with all of these political ads is that it seems like that has, and we all know this, right, for years, they say stuff that's not entirely true, or, and everybody, this is on both sides.
Yep.
They say this stuff, and you see it, and you're like, wow, so-and-so doesn't like babies. I'm not going to vote for them. And when you have this conversation, and then the candidate gets a chance to dispel that or kind of explain, you're like, huh, that's great. Well, John, I would love to think that everyone in Chicago listens to the John Williams Show, but they don't.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they buy all these ads and do whatever. And then I was thinking, wouldn't it be something in the, you know, if we think about the last 2 years, the thing that has been, the word that has been created and the idea of fake news, right? And the president loves to throw that phrase out there, but he's not entirely wrong.
Yeah.
And matter of fact, he's right. There is a lot of fake news out there, people posting stuff on Facebook and that's not true, and then people think it's news, or even news outlets who are perhaps not being as forthcoming or doing their due diligence or not putting all the information out there. So what if there was a watchdog group of some, it could be PolitiFacts or whatever, that before any of these ads were to run, they rated the legitimacy, I suppose, of how much of a percentage this ad is false or true. I did a little research after you and I talked about this.
Okay.
Did you know that politicians can say whatever they want in an ad?
Yeah, I do.
And you can't, because they're protected by the First Amendment. Yet, if I am a snake oil salesman saying that I'm going to sell you this stuff that if you rub it on your butt, you're going to lose 10 pounds, I can go to jail for that.
Wait a minute, there's this stuff I can put on my butt and lose 10 pounds?
Well, there is until I go to jail. And so there's this double standard. And so I was thinking about this. Well, how do we get around this? If the network, so this is how I came up with how we're going to do this, John.
Okay.
If the networks all got together, if the, just the three networks, NBC, CBS, and ABC, said, here's what we're going to do, ladies and gentlemen. You're going to run an ad, and we're going to give it to whoever the political fact-checking place is.
The Better Government Association of Illinois.
They're going to run an ad immediately after that ad for 10 seconds. They're going to buy that time, and they're going to say, the previous ad was 10% false.
You know, that's, okay, so just pause for a minute, because we were talking about this yesterday, and Bertrand said, yeah, but if they run 20 ads a day on a station, you know, all the politicians, that's 10 seconds times 20 times. The stations, they have programming, or they have slots for advertising, so who's, you know, where are we going to find the time? But if somebody was paying for it, they would take the money. So,
correct.
Right, so if those were like little, essentially 15-second, 10-second commercials commenting on the veracity of the previous commercial, then you got
something.
Or if
it was the law to have a disclaimer that you can't lie when you're trying to be elected for something.
Right, but Violetta, it's not the law. That's the thing.
Well, but
see,
that's what I'm saying. If it was, then no one would have to pay for it.
Yeah,
because
but then
it's
you got to score the truthiness of things. I mean, you say it's not true. I actually think it is true. Now we're getting to an argument about whether or not that ad was true, or is it half true, kind of true, misleading?
But imagine if the networks got together and they said, because look, the Better Government Association, I mean, we have that here in the Chicagoland. Yeah. Is that a national organization?
I don't know, but we have the BGA here, and there is. PolitiFact has an Illinois branch. So they exist here.
So if the network said, we're going to run this through the Truthometer with you guys, we're going to give you that 10 seconds, okay? All of us together as networks, we need to change the game and the conversation. I mean, look at whatever political side you are with this whole Judge Kavanaugh thing. I mean, I think that most of us will say, It's just not a great thing for our country, these arguments on both sides of this, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it really is. I mean, what Senator Flake said, it's tearing us apart, this kind of partisanship and yelling back and forth. It shouldn't be that way. But we're feeding into it in the fact that these politicians can say whatever they want. And while it might be true, or it might be a massage of the truth, I think it should be fair that in the end, what we want from everyone is to be honest and truthful. I think it's a pretty low bar.
Oh, you are so naive.
I know,
so
but it's
naive.
Like, how about you vote for me because I'm going to, you know, put a chicken in every pot and I'm going to do all that kind of stuff. But then instead, it's always like attack, 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 attack.
And right. If you said, I want to put a chicken in every pot, I'm going to do the best I can to give you the best life. Ah, that's their thing. But instead, they say the other guy, you know,
right.
Lou Manfredini actually
right.
doesn't like pots or chickens and he's going right. to steal your chicken. And he's going to do a satanic ritual with it that I can't even tell you about.
But I know the best product to use to shine that pot.
Hey, so, but the problem I first thought was, okay, but how are we going to find the time? But if it's purchased, then, you know, so now we all got to contribute to some fund, or I don't know how they're going to get the money for it. But just imagine if after the pro or the anti Kwame Raoul commercial, if right afterwards, and maybe it's only a 3-second thing, it says, the previous ad rated mostly false by PolitiFact. I mean, how long?
More information, go to this website.
Go to PolitiFact.com or the Better Government Association of Illinois.com. And that would be really fun because then you'd be going, oh my God, he doesn't like babies. This
right.
is the worst thing ever.
But what it takes is the courage of the people running these networks.
The TV. Well, I think it's the local TV station managers. I'll bet if your friend over at Channel 5 or somebody at Channel 9 said, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's be a ground. Now here's what they'll tell us, I'll bet. They'll say, if we do that, they're not going to spend any money on our station. We're going to lose all the Kwame Raoul commercial money.
You will, and they'll go to the other stations that will take them. But if you take the three major networks, now we're talking about, certainly they can buy it on cable and they can do whatever it is, but it has to start somewhere. I mean, look, there, you know, the example of, for any kind of great change, there has to be pain. And what we're talking about is money here, okay? And I think all of us, when we look at what's the best thing for this country, I mean, there's a lot of things that are really good for this country, but with these politicians running, the nastiness.
I know.
I don't care what side you're on. The constant attacks on each other is just not healthy.
And Lou is right.
Anyone.
Radio and TV stations have no option, right? So if the next time you hear a Cars for Kids commercial come on, that's a bad example because that's a commercial sponsor. But I mean, I know what you do, and I'm sorry that you leave our radio station when that comes on sometimes. But say the next time you hear a political ad, you don't want to hear it, and you turn the radio off. We have no choice. You know, we can't fix those ads. We have to run those ads. And usually we have to give them the best available rate.
So you know, the only reason that what I read when doing a little stuff with the FCC and FTC, the only reason that a station can refuse to run it is if technically something's wrong, like, you know, the audio's, you know, I can't understand audio
right.
or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, in our world, everything's either 15 seconds or 30 seconds or 60 seconds. It's, well, here's my ad. It's 65 seconds.
We
can't run that.
Yeah. Right. This text is just poured in from 630. How dare Lou Manfredini come on the radio and make sense?
I was worried where you were going whenever
I talk about this. That's why I enjoyed
this. This is not.
All right, hold on.
This is the thing.
I got to take a break. Will you stay there?
Okay.
What do you think about Lou's idea? unless it, and I think everybody's going to like it, except for the general managers of three radio stations or TV stations in town. Elgin Community College, November 10th, the Saturday after the midterm election. It'll be a great, fun, interesting, educational, brilliant show. Teddy Roosevelt ambles onto the stage. I talk to him for a little bit, and then you get a chance to ask questions, too. All the details at WGNradio.com/events. Starting a home improvement project can be filled with stress and challenges. Contact Cobblestone Development, a leader in the home remodeling industry, to take care of your kitchen, your bath, your other projects from beginning to end. In fact, their project managers will work with all of the trades needed to get your job done on time and on budget. Wouldn't that be nice to have somebody manage it for you? Now's the time to call Cobblestone. Tell them you heard it on GN Radio. Bill Comforti gives you a 20% discount on your project. Visit cobblestonedevelopment.com or call 773-661-0606. Mr. Fix-It, Lou Manfredini, has a really good idea. He said at the end of political ads here in Chicago, the TV station should run brief little disclaimers, if you will, that rate the accuracy of the ad you just heard. Glad they don't do that for the whole shows.
You're right.
Lou, listen to this. Where do I send the money? Hey, John, the candidates should pay for those disclaimers. John, this plan won't work because the networks lean mostly to the left and therefore would favor the Democrats over the Republican ads. Just my opinion.
No, but that's the thing. We take it away from the networks. In other words, this would be, in my opinion, if you really like PolitiFact or whatever, yeah, you can fill it with some. Either you could say, you know, it could be like a jury, three Republicans, three Democrats, three independent people,
yeah,
that have this thing to review these things. And then they come up with a consensus.
I trust the Better Government Association or PolitiFact. I mean, you know, maybe you won't like their result. Maybe you'll disagree with it. But it's better than what we got now, which is just like they can flat out lie to you and you have no say in the matter anyway.
Right. The thing is that if the candidates are provided the protection of the First Amendment, as they should be, as we are, then we have to have some sort of response or some sense of duty to say, right, is this true? I had a guy that used to work for us at one of the hardware stores that worked for one of the
30 seconds,
parties,
Mr. Fix-It.
And he went to this training when they would do these, you know, when they would do canvassing for candidates, and they would talk about, you know, the door hangers during the elections where they put on their door hanger, uh-huh, and you would come home and you see that and you grab it and you throw it away, but it says something negative about the other candidate, and they know that if you just read that quickly, John Williams doesn't like babies, throw it in the garbage. Then when you go in that booth, what do you remember?
John Williams doesn't like babies.
We need to be more transparent,
who does,
more honest with each other.
They're so overrated.
Truthful, and if we do that, then what the messages that will be out there will be more positive, and we can make a better informed decision.
Time's up. All right, I'm going to talk about this more. Maybe I'll get one of the managers from one of the TV stations to come on and tell us what they think about this. That's what I said. Thank you, Lou. Rokan, Anna DeVlantis in the other studio down the hall. Hi,
That's
kids.
That's right. Hi, John.
We are, and we're, oh, whew, John.
What Matt, what now?
I went to the game last night, and I'm still not 100% right after what happened. I'm just not right. I was just saying to Todd Manley, our boss, yeah, I was like, this feels a little, it's like a half an 84 for me, is what this is. It's a half an 84.
It's weird how quickly the season is over.
Yeah.
It is. And I think it's weird for me as a Cubs fan. It's a strange feeling to just have the expectation that the Cubs are going to the postseason all year. You know, like you feel they're going and then it comes down to that.
Right.
Or maybe we didn't make it to the World Series when the World Series is here, but it just seems like somebody pulled the rug out from underneath us. Like, wait, our season's over?
What? Javier Baez.
What just happened?
Not mentioning any names. pointing any fingers.
I'm just going to go through a couple right
you're
now.
You're mad at Javi right now?
I'm mad at them all.
What did Javi do?
Well, he missed a few opportunities.
Okay.
Do you want me to go down in order? First of all, what's that little guy, the fast guy? What's his name?
Al Gore.
Yeah, Al Gore. Why is he swinging? Don't swing!
I know. How they didn't call a timeout and go, okay, they should have taken the bat away from him. They should have sent him up there with a pencil. Just like, no bat.
Right. Oh. And we had to slap the ball. He could have done that.
I know this is embarrassing, but we're not going to let you have a bat. You just go up there and let them give you a walk.
And Hayward, I think I'm the maddest at him.
Really?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Okay, I'm going to leave. Goodbye.
Okay. Although we do understand that Joe Madden will be back next year. That's Tribune is reporting that.
That's good to hear.
So, all right.
I wish the Cubbies were going to the postseason.
Well, they were in the postseason for one night. Yes.
That's
were in
what I called the wild card.
That's
right.
A wild card. They were in the postseason. So technically, they made the postseason. Okay. So
we have that going for us.
Exactly. It's the longest streak of postseason activity in Cubs history, in the franchise history. So they got that going for us.
They went out with the whimper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.